We're continuing chapter 19, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
So Harry is lying in bed thinking, or maybe sitting in the common room or something. So Dumbledore had argued with Snape, in spite of all he had told Harry, in spite of his insistence that he completely trusted Snape. He had lost his temper with him. He did not think that Snape had tried hard enough to investigate the Slytherins, or perhaps to investigate a single Slytherin, Malfoy. Was it because Dumbledore did not want Harry to do anything foolish, to take matters into his own hands, that he pretended there was nothing in Harry's suspicions? That seemed likely. It might even be that Dumbledore did not want anything to distract Harry from their lessons or from procuring that memory from Slughorn. Perhaps Dumbledore did not think it right to confide suspicions about his staff to 16-year-olds. There you are, Potter. Harry jumped to his feet in shock, his wand at the ready. He'd been quite convinced that the common room was empty. He had not been at all prepared for a hulking figure to rise suddenly out of a distant chair. A closer look showed him it was Cormac McLaggen. "I've been waiting for you to come back," said McLaggen, disregarding Harry's drawn wand. "Must have fallen asleep. Look, I saw them taking Weasley up to the hospital wing earlier. Didn't look like he'll be fit for next week's match." It took Harry a few moments to realize what McLaggen was talking about. "Oh, right, Quidditch," he said, putting his wand back into the belt of his jeans, running a hand wearily through his hair. "Yeah, he might not make it." "Well then, I'll be playing keeper, won't I?" said McLaggen. "Yeah," said Harry. "Yeah, I suppose so." He could not think of an argument against him. After all, McLaggen had certainly performed second best in the trials. "Excellent," said McLaggen in a satisfied voice. "When's practice?" "What? Oh, there's one tomorrow evening." "Good. Listen, Potter, we should have a talk beforehand. I've got some ideas on strategy you might find useful." "Right," said Harry unenthusiastically. "Well, I'll hear them tomorrow, then. I'm pretty tired now. See you." The news that Ron had been poisoned spread quickly the next day, but did not cause the sensation that Katie's attack had done. People seemed to think it might have been an accident, given that he had been in the potions master's room at the time, and that he had been given an antidote immediately afterward. There was no real harm done. In fact, the Gryffindors were generally much more interested in the upcoming Quidditch match against Hufflepuff. Many of them wanted to see Zacharias Smith, who played Chaser on the Hufflepuff team, punished soundly for his commentary during the opening match against Slytherin. Harry, however, had never been less interested in Quidditch. He was rapidly becoming obsessed with Draco Malfoy, still checking the Marauder's map whenever he got the chance. He sometimes made detours to wherever Malfoy happened to be, but had not yet detected anything, him doing anything out of the ordinary. And there were still those inexplicable times when Malfoy simply vanished from the map. I like how he doesn't really think that's suspicious, that Malfoy's just vanishing from the map.
He does think it's suspicious.
But he's like, he goes,
he had not yet detected him doing anything out of the ordinary.
Other than
vanishing from the map. Super weird.
I don't know. You're just being a Burbishmaw.
I'm a Burbishmaw, really. This is a snuggle kitten.
I like that video of that cat.
What?
The video of the cat.
Oh, yes. There was a fluffy cat.
He'd get on the chest and then he'd just, like, roll that down into the neck.
But Harry did not get a lot of time to consider the problem with Quidditch practice, homework, and the fact that he was now being dogged wherever he went by Cormac McLaggen and Lavender Brown. He could not decide which of them was more annoying. McLaggen kept up a constant stream of hints that he would make a better permanent keeper for the team than Ron, And now that Harry was seeing him play regularly, he would surely come around to this way of thinking, too. He was also keen to criticize the other players and provide Harry with detailed training schemes so that once Harry was forced to remind him who was captain. Meanwhile, Lavender kept sidling up to Harry to discuss Ron, which Harry found almost more wearing than McLagan's Quidditch lectures. At first, Lavender had been very annoyed that nobody had thought to tell her Ron was in the hospital. I mean, I am his girlfriend. But unfortunately, she had decided to forgive Harry this lapse of memory, and was keen to have lots of in-depth chats with him about Ron's feelings, a most uncomfortable experience that Harry would have happily forgotten. "Look, why don't you talk to Ron about all this?" Harry asked, after a particularly long interrogation from Lavender. It took in everything from precisely what Ron had said about her new dress robes to whether or not Harry thought Ron considered his relationship with Lavender to be serious. "Well, I would, but he's always asleep when I go and see him," said Lavender fretfully. "Is he?" said Harry, surprised, for he had found Ron perfectly alert every time he had been up in the hospital wing, both highly interested in the news of Dumbledore and Snape's Row, and keen to abuse McLagan as much as possible. "Is Hermione Granger still visiting him?" Lavender demanded suddenly.
I'm hurting my arm in this position.
"Sorry." "You're a very proud kitten."
"No, it's my arm is
hurting." So anyways, "Is Hermione Granger still visiting him?" Lavender demanded suddenly. "Yeah, I think so. Well, they're friends, aren't they?" said Harry uncomfortably. "Friends, don't make me laugh," said Lavender scornfully. "She didn't talk to him for weeks after he started going out with me. But I suppose she wants to make up with him now that he's all interesting." "Would you call getting poisoned being interesting?" asked Harry. "Anyway, sorry, got to go. There's McLagan coming for a talk about Quidditch," said Harry hurriedly, as he dashed sideways through a door, pretending to be a solid wall, and sprinted down the shortcut that would take him off to potions, where, thankfully, neither Lavender nor McLagan could follow him. On the morning of the Quidditch match against Hufflepuff, Harry dropped in on the hospital wing before heading down to the pitch. Ron was very agitated. Madame Pomfrey would not let him go down to watch the match, feeling it would overexcite him. "How's McLagan shaping up?" he asked Harry nervously, apparently forgetting that he had already asked the same question twice. "I told you," said Harry patiently. "He could be world-class, and I wouldn't want to keep him. He keeps trying to tell everyone what to do, thinks he could play every position better than the rest of us. I can't wait to be shot of him. And speaking of getting shot of people," Harry added, getting to his feet and picking up his firebolt, "will you stop pretending to be asleep when Lavender comes to see you? She's driving me mad as well." "Oh," said Ron, looking sheepish. "Yeah, all right. If you just don't want to go out with her, tell her," said Harry. "Yeah, well, it's not that easy, is it?" said Ron. He paused. "Hermione's going to look in before the match?" he added casually. "No, she's already gone down to the pitch with Ginny." "Oh," said Ron, looking rather glum. "Right. Well, good luck. Hope you hammer Smith. "I'll try," said Harry, shouldering his broom. "See you after the match." He hurried down through the deserted corridors. The whole school was outside, either seated already in the stadium or heading down toward it. He was looking out of the windows as he passed, trying to gauge how much wind they were facing, when a noise ahead made him glance up, and he saw Malfoy walking toward him, accompanied by two girls, both of whom looked sulky and resentful. Malfoy stopped short at the sight of Harry, and then gave a short, humorless laugh and continued walking. "Where are you going?" Harry demanded. "Yeah, I'm really going to tell you because it's your business, Potter," sneered Malfoy. "You better hurry up. They'll be waiting for the chosen captain, the boy who scored, or whatever they call you these days." One of the girls gave an unwilling giggle. Harry stared at her. She blushed. Malfoy pushed past Harry, and she and her friend vanished in a trot, turning the corner. Harry stood rooted on the spot and watched them disappear from view. This was infuriating. He was already cutting it fine to get to the match on time, and that there was Malfoy, skulking off while the rest of the school was absent. Harry's best chance yet of discovering what Malfoy was up to. The remaining seconds trickled past, and Harry remained where he was frozen, gazing at the place where Malfoy had vanished. "Where have you been?" demanded Ginny as Harry sprinted into the changing rooms. The whole team was changed and ready. Coot and Peaks, the beaters, were both hitting their clubs nervously against their legs.
"I met Malfoy," Harry told her quietly, as he pulled his scarlet robes over his head.
"So?" "So I want to know how he's come up, how come he's up at the castle with a couple of girlfriends while everyone else is down here." "Does it matter right now?" "I'm not likely to find out, am I?" said Harry, seizing his firebolt and pushing his glasses straight. "Come on, then." Without another word, he marched out onto the pitch to deafening cheers and boos. There was little wind. The clouds were patchy. Every now and then, there were dazzling flashes of bright sunlight. "Tricky conditions," McLagan said, bracingly to the team. "Coot, Peaks, you'll want to fly out of the sun so they don't see you coming." "I'm the captain, McLagan. Shut up giving them instructions," said Harry angrily.
"Just get up by the goalposts." Once McLagan had marched off, Harry turned to Coot and Peaks.
"Make sure you do fly out of the sun," he told them grudgingly. He shook hands with the Hufflepuff captain, and then, on Madame Hooch's whistle, kicked off and rose into the air, higher than the rest of his team, streaking around the pitch in search of the snitch. If he could catch it good and early, there might be a chance he could get back up to the castle, seize the Marauder's map, and find out what Malfoy was doing.
"And that's Smith of Hufflepuff with a quaffle," said dreamy voice,
echoing over the grounds. "He did the commentary last time, of course, and Ginny Weasley flew into him, I think probably on purpose, it looked like it. Smith was being quite rude about Gryffindor. I expect he regrets it now that he's playing them. Oh, look, he's lost the quaffle. Ginny took it from him. I do like her. She's very nice." Harry stared down at the commentator's podium. Truly, no one in the right mind would have let Luna Lovegood commentate. But even from above there was no mistaking that long, dirty blonde hair, nor the necklace of butterbeer corks. Beside Luna, Professor McGonagall was looking slightly uncomfortable, as though she indeed was having second thoughts about this appointment. "But now a big Hufflepuff player's got the quaffle from her. I can't remember his name. It's something like Bibble. No, Buggins. It's Cadweller. Cadwallader," said Professor McGonagall loudly from beside Luna. The crowd laughed. Harry stared around for the snitch. There was no sign of him.
Moments later, Cadwallader scored.
McLagan had been shouting criticism at Ginny for allowing the quaffle out of her possession, with the result that he had not noticed the large red ball soaring past his right ear. "McLagan, will you pay attention to what you're supposed to be doing and leave everyone else alone?" bellowed Harry, wheeling around to face his keeper. "You're not setting a great example," McLagan shouted back, red-faced and furious. "And Harry Potter's now having an argument with his keeper," said Luna serenely, while both Hufflepuffs and Slytherins below in the crowd cheered and jeered. "I don't think they'll often find the snitch. Maybe it's a clever ruse." Swearing angrily, Harry spun round and set off again around the pitch, scanning the skies for some sign of the tiny winged golden ball. Ginny and Demelza scored a goal apiece, giving the red and gold clad supporters below something to cheer about. Then Cadwallader scored again, making things level, but Luna did not seem to have noticed. She appeared singularly uninterested in such mundane things as the score, and kept attempting to draw the crowd's attention to such things as interestingly shaped clouds, and the possibility that Zacharias Smith, who had so far failed to maintain possession of the quaffle for longer than a minute, was suffering from something called loser's lurgy. 70-40 to Hufflepuff, barked Professor McGonagall into Luna's megaphone.
"Is it already?" said Luna serenely.
Vaguely. Serene was before. "Oh, look, the Gryffindor keepers got hold of one of the beaters' bats." Harry spun around in midair. Sure enough, McLagan, for reasons best known to himself, had pulled Peaks' bat from him and appeared to be demonstrating how to hit a bludger toward an oncoming Cadwallader. You give him back his bat and get towards the goalposts, roared Harry, pelting toward McLagan just as McLagan took a ferocious swipe at the bludger and mishit him. A blinding, sickening pain, a flash of light, distant screams, and the sensation of falling down a large tunnel. And the next thing Harry knew, he was lying in a remarkably warm and comfortable bed and looking up at a lamp that was throwing a circle of golden light onto a shadowy ceiling. He raised his head awkwardly. There on his left was a familiar-looking, freckly, red-haired person. "Nice of you to drop in," said Ron, grinning. Harry blinked and looked around. Of course, the hospital wing. The sky outside was indigo, streaked with crimson. The match must have finished hours ago, as had any hope of cornering Malfoy. Harry's head felt strangely heavy. He raised a hand and felt a stiff turban of bandages. What happened? "Cracked skull," said Madame Pomfrey, bustling up and pushing him back against his pillows. "Nothing to worry about. I mended it at once, but I can keep you overnight. You shouldn't overexert yourself for a few hours." "I don't want to stay here overnight," said Harry angrily, sitting up and throwing back his covers. "I want to find McLagan and kill him." "I'm afraid that would come under the heading of overexertion," said Madame Pomfrey, pushing him firmly back onto the bed and raising her wand in a threatening manner. "You will stay here until I discharge you, Potter, or I shall call the headmaster." She bustled back into her office, and Harry sank back into his pillows, fuming. "Do you know how much we lost by?" he asked Ron through clenched teeth. "Well, yeah, I do," said Ron apologetically. Final score was 320-60. "Brilliant," said Harry savagely. "Really brilliant. I get a hold of McLagan." "You don't want to get a hold of him. He's the size of a troll," said Ron reasonably. "Personally, I think there's a lot to be said for hexing him with that toenail thing with the princes. Anyway, the rest of the team might have dealt with him before he got out of here. They're not happy." There was a note of badly suppressed glee in Ron's voice. Harry could tell he was nothing short of thrilled that McLagan had messed up so badly. Harry lay there staring up at the patch of light on the ceiling, his recently mended skull not hurting precisely, but feeling slightly tender underneath all the bandaging. "I could hear the match commentary from here," said Ron, his voice shaking with laughter. "I hope Luna always commentates from now on. Loser's lurgy." But Harry was still too angry to see much humor in the situation, and after a while Ron's snorts subsided. "Ginny came to visit while you were unconscious," he said after a long pause. And Harry's imagination zoomed into overdrive, rapidly constructing a scene in which Ginny, weeping over his lifeless form, confessed her feelings of deep attraction to him while Ron gave him his blessing. "She reckons you only just arrived on time for the match. How come? You left here early enough." "Oh," said Harry, as the scene in his mind's eye imploded. "Yeah, well, I saw Malfoy sneaking off with a couple of girls who didn't look like they wanted to be with him. And that's the second time he's made sure he isn't down on the Quidditch pitch with the rest of the school. He skipped the last match, too, remember?" Harry sighed. "Wish I'd followed him now. The match was such a fiasco." "Don't be stupid," said Ron sharply. "You couldn't have missed a Quidditch match just to follow Malfoy. You're the captain." "I want to know what he's up to," said Harry. "And don't tell me it's all in my head, not after what I heard from him and Snape." "I never said it was all in your head," said Ron, hoisting himself up on an elbow in turn and frowning at Harry. "There's no rule saying only one person at a time can be plotting anything in this place. You're getting obsessed with Malfoy, Harry. I mean, thinking about missing a match just to follow him." "I want to catch him at it," said Harry in frustration. "I mean, where is he going when he disappears off the map?" "I don't know. Hogsmeade," suggested Ron. "I've never seen him going on any of the secret passageways on the map. I thought they were all being watched now, anyway."
"Well, then, I don't know," said Ron. Silence fell between them. Harry stared up at the circle of lamplight above him, thinking. If only he had Rufus Scrimgeour's power, he would have been able to set a tail upon Malfoy. But unfortunately, Harry did not have an office full of aurors at his command. He thought fleetingly of trying to set something up with a DA. But there was, again, the problem that people would be missed from lessons.
Most of them, after all, still had full schedules. There was a low rumbling noise from Ron's bed. After a while, Madame Pomfrey came out of her office, this time wearing a thick dressing gown. It was easiest to feign sleep. Harry rolled over onto his side and listened, all the curtains closing themselves as she waved her wand. The lamps dimmed, and she returned to her office. She heard the door click behind her, and she knew that she was off to bed. This was, Harry reflected in the darkness, the third time he had been brought to the hospital wing because of a Quidditch injury. Last time he had fallen off his broom due to the presence of Dementors around the pitch. The time before that, all the bones had been removed from his arm by the incurably inept Professor Lockhart. That had been the most painful injury so far. He remembered the agony of regrowing an arm full of bones in one night. A discomfort not eased by the arrival of an unexpected visitor in the middle of the... Harry sat bolt upright, his heart pounding, his bandaged turban astir. He had a solution at last. There was a way to have Malfoy followed. How could he have forgotten? Why hadn't he thought of it before? The question was how to call him. What did you do? Quietly, tentatively, Harry spoke into the darkness. Creature. There was a very loud crack, and the sounds of scuffling and squeaks filled the silent room. Ron awoke with a yelp. What's going? Harry pointed his wand hastily at the door of Madame Pomfrey's office and muttered, Mufliato, so that she would not come running. Then he scrambled to the end of his bed for a better look at what was going on. Two house elves were rolling on the floor in the middle of the dormitory, one wearing a shrunken maroon jumper and several woolly hats, the other a filthy old rag strung over his hips like a loincloth. There was another loud bang, and Peeves and the poltergeist appeared in midair above the wrestling elves. I was watching that, Potty, he told Harry indignantly, pointing at the fight below before letting out a loud crackle. Look at the ickle creatures squabbling, bitey-bitey, punchy-punchy. Creature will not insult Harry Potter in front of Dobby. No, it won't. No, he won't. Or Dobby will shut Creature's mouth for him, cried Dobby in a high-pitched voice. Kiki Scratchy, cried Peeves happily, now pelting bits of chalk at the elves to enrage them further. Tweaky Pokey. Creature will say what he likes about his master. Oh, yes. And what a master he is, filthy friend of Mudbloods. Oh, what would Creature's poor mistress say? Exactly what Creature's mistress would have said, they did not find out. For that moment, Dobby sank his little fist into Creature's mouth and knocked out half of his teeth. Harry and Ron both leapt out of their beds and wrenched the two elves apart, though they continued to try and kick and punch each other, egged on by Peeves, who swooped around the lamp, squealing, stick your fingers up his nose, he draws cork and pulls ears. Harry aimed his wand at Peeves and said, Langlock. Peeves clutched his throat, gulped, and then swooped from the room, making obscene gestures but unable to speak, owing to the fact that his tongue had been glued to the roof of his mouth. Nice one, said Ron appreciatively, lifting Dobby in the air, so that his flailing limbs no longer made contact with the creature. That was another Prince Hex, wasn't it? Yeah, said Harry, twisting Creature's wizened arm into a half Nelson. Right, I'm forbidding you to fight each other. Well, Creature, you're forbidden to fight Dobby. Dobby, I know I'm not allowed to give you orders. Dobby is a free house elf, and he can obey anyone he likes. Dobby will do whatever Harry Potter wants him to do, said Dobby, tears now streaming down his shriveled little face onto his jumper. Okay, then, said Harry, and he and Ron both released the elves, who fell to the floor but did not continue fighting. Master called me, croaked Creature, sinking into a bow, even as Harry gave a look that plainly wished him a painful death. Yeah, I did, said Harry, glancing toward Madame Pomfrey's office to check that the Mufliato spell was still working. There was no sign that she had heard any of the commotion. I've got a job for you. Creature will do anything, whatever Master wants, said Creature, sinking so low that his lips almost touched his gnarled toes. Because Creature has no choice, but Creature is ashamed to have such a master, yes. Dobby will do it, Harry Potter, squeaked Dobby, his tennis ball-sized eyes swimming in tears. Dobby would help. It would be honored to help Harry Potter. Come to think of it, it would be good to have both of you, said Harry. Okay, then. I want you to tail Draco Malfoy. Ignoring the look of mingled surprise and exasperation on Ron's face, Harry went on. I want to know where he's going, who he's meeting, what he's doing. I want you to follow him around the clock. Yes, Harry Potter, said Dobby at once, his great eyes shining with excitement. And if Dobby does it wrong, Dobby will throw himself off the topmost tower, Harry Potter. There won't be any need for that, Harry said hastily. Master wants me to follow the youngest of the Malfoys, crooked creature. Master wants me to spy upon the pure-blood great-nephew of my old mistress. That's the one, said Harry, foreseeing a great danger, and determining to prevent it immediately. And you're forbidden to tip him off, creature, or to show him what you're up to, or to talk to him at all, to write him messages, or contact him in any way, got it? He thought he could see creature struggling to see a loophole in the instructions he'd been given. For a moment or two, and to Harry's deep satisfaction, creature bowed deeply again and said, with bitter resentment, Master thinks of everything, and creature must obey him, even though creature would much rather be the servant of the Malfoy boy. Oh, yes. That's settled then, said Harry. And I want regular reports, but make sure I'm not surrounded by people when you turn. Ron and Hermione are okay. And don't tell anyone what you're doing. Just stick to Malfoy like a couple of wart plasters. And that's the end of chapter 19. And chapter 20 is called Lord Voldemort's Quest.
I love you so much, baby kitten.
You're the sweetest baby kitten ever.
Good night, kitten.